Welcome, people, and thank you for tuning in. This is the Sports Underground Podcast with Baron Graf.
And look who's coming up.
Only last week, I murdered a rock, injured a stone, hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick.
So let's do what we do tonight.
And now, from the Hotbox Studio in Los Angeles, which is literally an 8x10 box in Baron's garage, here's your host, Baron Graf.
Hey, hey, what is happening, folks? It's the Sports Underground. I'm your host, Baron Graf. Back after an extended absence, several people, all four of you, noticed that I haven't been around. So listen, here's the deal, guys. This is just the God's truth. And if you want to hate me because I'm from California and I get cold easily, that's fine. I can live with that. But this is the deal. The Hotbox Studio has been far from hot for the last several weeks. As a matter of fact, it's downright frigid in the Hotbox Studio because it gets down into like the 40s. Now, for the people that live in like Missouri and Minnesota, you're thinking like, oh, this guy's such a wimp. It's the 40s. Let's go swimming. It's in the 40s, you know? But for me, that's cold. And like, I would try to record the show and my teeth would be chattering by like the 10th minute. I know. I'm a big sissy. I know. I can hear my cousin laughing at me now. Stop laughing at me, Ricky. So tonight, my good friend Ron Guerin is kind enough to open his home and open his studio to me so that we can record the show. And so it is my pleasure to introduce and have on board on the show, Ron Guerin. Ron, what is up?
Hey, Baron, what's happening? Thanks so much for having me, man.
Dude, this is great. So people that know the show might kind of have some background on Ron. Ron is actually the inaugural member of the Sports Underground Hall of Fame. Ron was really the guy who helped me get off the ground with this deal. So I don't know why it's taken us this long to get in the studio together, but I'm stoked that this is happening. And full disclosure here, because I would never blow smoke on my fans, because there's just not that many of you, so I would have to answer every complaint. Ron is I mean, there's just not a kinder way to say it. You're a full-on San Francisco homer.
Yeah, without a doubt. And first off, let me say it's very much an honor for me to be here tonight and also to be the inaugural member of the Sports Underground Hall of Fame. Literally could be the high point of my entire life. So thank you so much, Baron, for bestowing that honor upon me, and I will wear it with pride from now until the day I die. And yes, as you sit in front of my signed Montana jersey and my signed Steve Young football and underneath my San Francisco Giants hats, you can say that I am a San Francisco homer.
But now, hold on. I got to add, first of all, you need to start setting better goals for your life. If making the Sports Underground Hall of Fame is like the pinnacle, shoot higher. That's all I'm saying. Like, if at the end of your life, at your eulogy, they say the greatest thing that Ron Guerin ever accomplished, if that happens and I'm still alive, I might have to hang myself. That would be terrible.
Well, you'll be doing the eulogy if that in fact happens, because you're probably one of the best speakers I know. So you can just throw that in there. Ron Guerin, he lived a wonderful life and was the inaugural member of the Sports Underground Hall of Fame.
Correct. And also, just because I believe in doing this, I have to out you. You also have an Emmitt Smith jersey hanging in your closet.
That is true. That is true.
All of the 49er fans in the audience, kick Ron's ass the next time you see him.
I do it completely out of respect for my closest rivals. That's why I have an Emmitt Smith jersey. And at the time, he still does to me, he epitomizes one of the greatest running backs of all time, and he was our greatest rival, so I have to have him right alongside my Joe Montana jersey.
Yeah, you have to think. Also, Ricky Waters in the conversation.
Yeah, well,
I think Ricky's a little underrated, but nonetheless, you know, I got a great story about the 49ers and the Cowboys. You would remember better than I do, because I was completely blasted when this happened. But it was somewhere in the mid-90s, the Niners and the Cowboys were playing, and I think it was either the year that Deion Sanders went to the Cowboys, or all I remember was Kenton Norton Jr. was still there, and he was doing that like crazy roided out, like punching the goalpost thing that he did. And I remember this like it was yesterday, because I watched that game with a bunch of Cowboy fans. I mean, it was like an entire room of Cowboy fans, and it was literally the only person that was like, this is not going to go well for Dallas, guys. San Francisco is going to kick Dallas's ass. And no, everybody was mad at me, like didn't want to listen to me. And this is really, I think this might be the first time that this ever happened in my life, that I was watching an athletic contest. And before it ever started, I saw something that other people didn't see. And I said, this is going to end poorly. And if you remember that game, I think it was like the first three possessions of the first quarter. It was 21-0. I mean, they hadn't even finished announcing the starting lineups. And it was 21-0. San Francisco, and it was like a bomb had gone off in this house, and I could palpably feel the hatred for me. I feared for my safety. I really did. I'll never forget that moment, because it was one of those things where I said, this is what's going to happen, and it's happened. And oddly enough, if people listen to this show, if you are a dedicated listener of the Sports Underground, you know that I've done this a couple of times now. Okay, now the Sports Underground was on it 2 years ago, telling you Robert Griffin III was going to be your Heisman Trophy winner, won the Heisman Trophy. More recently, we just told you, hey, Notre Dame has no business being in the national championship.
And you were right about that. I argued with you for a moment on that. I had a feeling that they could have been a team of destiny, and of course I was proven horribly wrong in that game.
It was very interesting that. But even more, I'll say even more pertinent, this might be... I might have only had one deeper call than this. This is definitely the farthest shot that I've ever called in my lifetime. I've never been as accurate as I was in the prediction that I made for the Super Bowl from as far away.
When exactly did you make this prediction? It was in preseason, right?
It was the day before. I remember because my birthday is September 5th. The season opened on September 5th. I did a show on September 4th. So this audio clip that we're getting ready to play, this is my preseason Super Bowl prediction from September 4th of 2012. So my predictions, I'm going to give you my Super Bowl prediction preseason. I hate doing this because injuries are such a factor, but preseason, I like it this year. I'm calling the Harbaugh Bowl. Niners versus Ravens in the Harbaugh Bowl. That's my pick. That's how I'm going.
How did that happen?
Like I said, I hate doing it because injuries are a factor and everything comes into play. And I never, just for the record, I never in my wildest dreams would have said, and Colin Kaepernick is going to start in the Super Bowl. I mean, listen, I'm not Jimmy the Greek here, but I really liked what I saw out of those teams in the season prior, and I felt like they deserved to be in the Super Bowl last year. If you remember, I mean, the Niners were like a couple of muffed punts away from it. I'm sure you remember. It's like,
yes,
it's
definitely.
Like rubbing salt in the wound right now. He has the pained look of like the only thing I can imagine. I'm trying to explain this to you, but the look on Ron's face is like I would imagine is like the look on like the face of an animal, like if you drove them out in the desert. And like threw him out of the car and then shut the door, like that look that you get, like you're not leaving me here, are you? That was the look of pain that just crossed Ron's head when I said muffed punt.
But I got to give it to you, man. I mean, it was a long shot prediction, but at the same time, it's very rare that a team would repeat in the championship game, let alone actually win it and go on to the Super Bowl. So it was a great pick, and I don't know, maybe it was some sort of divine intervention, but you were definitely right on that one.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this is going to be a great game. I said this as soon as the matchup was set, I said this is going to be, and I stand by this, I think this is going to be, regardless of winners and losers, this is going to be one of the best Super Bowls, certainly in recent memory. If you think about it, we haven't had any like seminal classic like Super Bowl matchups for a while. Like I remember when I was younger and your Joe Montana San Francisco 49ers and that, you know, driving the field against the Bengals, and like I remember those games like so crystally clear. And I don't feel like that ever really, like, throughout the 90s. I mean, you had the Cowboys just, like, smoking the Bills a couple of times. And it was just like, I think this is going to be one of the most hotly contested Super Bowls that we're going to see or have seen for a while.
It really does seem as if neither team is capable of beating themselves. They're so well coached. And of course, on the Baltimore side, they have the seasoned veterans who are battle tested and made it through the playoffs, even though they came off a little bit of a losing streak there at the end of the season. And then you have this upstart 49er team who has belief. They are just so well coached and they believe in what they're doing. They've totally bought in. And I haven't seen a Niner team play this well since those Montana days, to be honest. I think that this is definitely going to be one of the best matchups we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, the other thing to remember about this too is like, yes, you're right. Neither one of these teams is going to beat themselves. But I think the other part of it that has to do a lot with coaching and just the makeup of these two teams is that neither one of these teams, there's no quit in either one of these teams. And if one of these teams ends up being down by, you know, two touchdowns with 3 minutes left, don't expect you're not going to get a fight, because these are two teams that are both going to fight until they say it's time to go to the locker room. And that's part of what I think is going to make it great. But the real storyline, everybody wants to talk about Harbaugh and the brothers. It's like that, to me, that is the most ridiculous storyline. They're just going to beat that thing to death. Like, I think they're going to start talking about that, like, incessantly around, like, 9 a.m. on Sunday morning.
Or 9 a.m. last weekend.
Right, exactly.
They've already began talking about it.
Yeah, and then to me, that's the farthest storyline from what's really going on. Because, like you said, it's this matchup between two similarly styled teams. One that I would say the Ravens at this point are certainly in the twilight of their career, if this is not the swan song for their defense. The Niners, on the other hand, are, like you said, an upstart team. But the crazy thing is you can't say, oh, the Ravens are long in the tooth and they can't get after it the way that they used to, even though there's some element of truth to that. You also can't say, well, the Niners, they're this greenhorn, inexperienced team. It's like they're not all the way at the ends of those extremes. And I think that's part of what makes it really intriguing is you can see any angle in this game coming to fruition. You can see, hey, this is a Niner team that's very young, and this could be the moment that they, like, make their mark and set the tone for what they're going to play like for the next few years. On the other side of the ball, you can definitely see where it's like, okay, the Ravens are really going to put a period at the end of the sentence that is, you know, the Ray Lewis years. And they certainly still have enough young guys on that defense that they can get after you.
No question about it. And the interesting thing to me is, as far as these two defenses are concerned, and what you said about Baltimore is, I think they're going to get after it more and harder and better than they ever have. I think that they are, as a team, truly inspired by the Ray Lewis story. They want to take him out on top, and it's going to be a war on both sides of the ball with both of these defenses. I think that Vic Fangio and the coaching staff of the San Francisco 49ers has done an outstanding job with this defense over the last 2 years, especially their defensive line and of course the offensive line as well. They're playing better than they have in many, many, many years as a team ever since the Harbaugh era began. And the Ravens are going to come out and be hitting some people. There's just no question about it. They're going to come out hard and fast and really try to take it to the 49ers early.
And I think that this is a Ravens team that has demonstrated at this point that they're not really too worried about financial penalties for hitting guys high. Like,
they
really look like, hey, we're willing to do whatever it takes. We're really willing to make whatever kind of investment, even if that means coming out of our pocketbook, missing games next year. They really seem to be all in to win this year.
They look like a team that plays like they already have blood on their teeth. That's what the Ravens' defense is. They will go out and hit you harder and faster than any other team, and it works. It works.
And the interesting thing to me, and the crazy thing is I got to tell you, like, earlier this week, leading up to tonight, I mean, as recently as Tuesday, I really, really strongly felt like it was San Francisco's game to lose. I don't feel that way right now. I feel like even though Baltimore is not favored in Las Vegas, I feel like momentum has swung to Baltimore. And let me tell you why. Because what I realized with this whole flap that's been made about Ray Lewis and the...
I'm sorry, I stopped listening. Did you say Baltimore was going to win? Oh, okay, sorry.
Deer antler. Don't worry, you'll get your chance. Yeah. But listen, my point is this, is that right now, you cannot bring to memory the last soundbite that Ray Rice gave, that Joe Flacco gave. You can't remember the last question that anybody not named Ray Lewis for Baltimore answered. And the reason that's significant to me is a couple of things. One, he's unquestionably the leader of this team. And to me, the more he gets attacked, the more they make accusations like this. In the Los Angeles Times today, the front page, Bill Plaschke writes an article bringing up the murder trial that he was involved in 13 years ago. And so my point is that the more of that gets drawn towards Ray Lewis, I think that, one, that's going to inspire that team even more to play for him. Two, I think that as a veteran and as a guy who's no stranger to these storylines, I don't think that's going to affect his play one bit on Sunday. And the third thing is, I think it's actually going to inspire him on a different level. Because if you listen to his speak, if you listen to what he has said for the last several weeks since coming back, whenever he's interviewed after a game, he always says this one very specific thing, and he's quoting a scripture from the Bible, which, of course, he's a very devout Christian at this point. And the scripture he's quoting, is he says something to the effect of, he paraphrases it here and there, he works around it, but basically what he is saying is that no weapon formed against God's child will prosper. That's the gist of the scripture that he's quoting. And essentially is what he is saying is, and he said it as no weapon crafted against this team. He'll say it in different ways. But to me, all that he sees, he doesn't see people making these accusations. All he sees is people attacking him personally. And Christians love to do this. And I'm not going to get into a religious debate. But even when they are wrong, and you pointed out to them that they are blatantly and horribly wrong, Christians have the ability to turn that into, you're only attacking me because of my faith. And we certainly saw that with like the Tim Tebow and that whole thing last year. And so I think all that's going on right now is that Ray Lewis is being further emblazoned in what he believes. And so there's no departure from character for the 49ers throughout this week.
I would have to agree that it emboldens him, and he does sound like a man who feels as if he is blessed in some way or has been divinely touched in order to be in this position at this time. And that, to me, is scary because he looks to me as if he is a man that believes that he's invincible, which is even going to make him try harder, hit harder, play faster. When you heard him yesterday at the press conference when he was responding to the allegations about the deer antler, whatever.
It feels weird to say deer spray.
Deer spray
makes me really uncomfortable.
Me too. I don't want any deer spray near me. But of course, apparently it has human growth hormone in it, which is banned by the NFL, but they can't test for it because they don't do blood tests on and on. But when he was defending himself, or at least vehemently denying the fact that he had done anything wrong, he looked bulletproof. He looked like he was a divine soldier of sorts. And it kind of goes along with what you were saying. He had a look in his eye as if there was absolutely no doubt in his mind that he was placed here by some sort of divine intervention. And to me, that looked and felt like he looked like it, he was invincible. Like, this is going to be his last game. He doesn't care if he dies on the field. He's going to win this game.
You just made me think of that scene in Any Given Sunday when the character that Lawrence Taylor is playing lays out for that final. And that, I mean, it kind of is like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird how it's like, and this is the thing, this is what people who don't follow sports don't really understand, is that like the stuff that actually happens in sports, the reason we're all huge fans of any sport is because the stuff that actually happens, you can't write it, man.
Oh, yeah.
You cannot write the drama that's going to unfold on Sunday.
And this Super Bowl has the makings of creating some real drama.
Real drama, especially when you start to measure that against the backdrop of what happens. So the 49ers, and looking at their side of it, this is another reason, and I'll let you respond to this, but there's another reason that I don't feel that I've changed. I'll just say that my opinion has swayed away from the 49ers is, you know, obviously recently, on Media Day, Randy Moss makes this statement about how he's the greatest wide receiver of all time, which is, you know, we'll have another conversation about that. But I think one thing that really strikes me about that is it's so out of type for Randy Moss in this season to say something like that.
Well, he hid it for a long time, didn't he? And he just couldn't keep his mouth shut for one more week. I mean, for goodness sake, he's done such a wonderful job of being a role model for the team, being the veteran leader, keeping his mouth shut, keeping his nose clean, playing his role, accepting his new role as a veteran leader on this team. And then he comes out and says that he's the greatest wide receiver of all time while wearing a 49er uniform, and the Hall of Famer Jerry Rice is sitting right outside at the ESPN booth. It was just completely disrespectful. And now 49er Nation, if you'd like to call it that, is not rooting for Randy Moss anymore. They want the Niners to win the game and Randy to hurt an ankle.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, I think there's a defensive player, maybe Cummins, is it, that made some statement about how he wouldn't want to play with, you know, a homosexual teammate. And it's like, dude, you play for San Francisco. And I'm not trying to be, like, stereotypical, but, I mean, really, like, you don't play for the Dallas Cowboys. Not that there's not, you know, a gay and lesbian community in
Dallas.
I think
that Dallas has more gay players than any other team in the NFL.
Easy now. But here's a great question, though. Does it matter?
No, absolutely not. It does not matter.
If Dallas finishes 9-7 and Cleveland finishes 6-8 and Cleveland doesn't have any gay players, does it matter?
Absolutely not.
And that's the point of, like, why on earth would this guy even say that? Like,
it just shows the level of class and intelligence of some certain people in the NFL, and unfortunately, one of them happens to be on my team. That's a whole other long conversation.
It's a whole other long conversation, but my point is this, and the reason I brought it up wasn't to, like, get into that conversation, but was more to say this. Ray Lewis is the focus of the media in Baltimore, on the Baltimore Ravens side.
I think it's the focus of the media, period, now.
But that is not out of type for Baltimore. He is the spokesperson for that team. The 49ers, the greatness of what Harbaugh has done in San Francisco is that there is no focal point of the 49ers. It's so diffused, like, and listening, they're all like mini Bill Belichicks. For 2 years, you haven't been able to get a worthwhile soundbite out of any of them, and Harbaugh speaks for the team. And now, the week before the biggest game that any of them has ever played in, they're moving out of type. And that more than anything is what really unsettles me.
And we have Randy Moss to thank for it in some ways.
We'll get to that right after the break. I know I'm not going to sway you off of what you believe to be true about your team. I know I'm not going to convince you that the Niners can't win the Super Bowl, but my pick is Baltimore 20, San Francisco 17.
Really?
That's my pick.
2017. I think that it's going to be 28-21 49ers with a last-minute touchdown with Colin Kaepernick running in to win the game. And since it's the break, I think that I understand what usually happens on this show. Normally, we have some sort of song choice that takes place.
Song interlude, sure.
So we'll go with one of my favorites, and it's the old San Francisco band. And the Niner faithful out there, just remember. Don't stop believing. And yes, that's the real Steve Perry. It's not the new guy. I don't even know his name. I chose to forget it as soon as Journey decided to remaster all of their songs with the new singer just to screw over Steve Perry. But that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, you just told me about that. That's crazy.
Well, yeah, Steve Perry wasn't too happy about them replacing the singer, and they wouldn't let him use the original masters, so they just remastered all the songs.
That's crazy.
In any case...
But it is kind of interesting replacing, you know, the lead of your band, and that's another great storyline of this Super Bowl.
No question about it.
What happens if Colin Kaepernick throws two picks?
What happens if Colin Kaepernick throws two picks? You know, I think that this is a key thing about this particular game, is the quarterback play is going to be extremely significant. And I think that really all the pressure is on Joe Flacco. Because if he does not have a good game, the Ravens are going to have a hard time. I think that the 49er offense is designed, and Kaepernick has proven in the last couple of games that he can adapt to different types of offensive schemes. He was able to hand the ball off, make a precision pass at the right time, play conservative run football, which is the way that the 49ers offense has been built anyway. Colin Kaepernick can make a couple of mistakes. Joe Flacco is going to have an MVP type of game in order to win, and I don't think he's going to do it.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with you more on this point, because the fact of the matter is all of the pressure is on Kaepernick.
No.
In fact, I think I could argue that Colin Kaepernick, obviously, this is the biggest game that he's ever played, but this kid played at Nevada in college. He's never approached a stage like this. Flip the script. Now, hold on now. And now flip the script. Now, let's see. Who has Baltimore beaten to get to this? Who did they beat last week, Ron?
I don't watch the Baltimore Ravens.
last week was the Pro Bowl, so I'm going to give you a bye on that.
Okay.
They beat Tom Brady,
who's
an unquestioned
Like mentioning Tom Brady's name anywhere.
Okay.
Anyway.
They beat Tom Brady. And not only beat Tom Brady, it wasn't like, oh, it was a big slugfest and they managed to win. They confused Tom Brady. And it is not very often that you see Tom Brady confused by anybody. The week prior to that, they beat Peyton Manning. He's another Hall of Famer. Again, they confused Peyton Manning. They made Peyton Manning play outside of his comfort zone. So to me, all of the pressure squarely rides on Colin Kaepernick, and here's why. Because there's no question who's running the show in Baltimore. They are so sold out on Joe Flacco, it's ridiculous. There's no question about that. Not even a whisper, right? And I also thought it was very interesting the way that Alex Smith was handled on Media Day as well. But that's, again, another conversation. But here's what I want to really bring to light. Colin Kaepernick, of all the, you know, stuff we want to talk about him and how brilliant he's been, let's talk about what he's actually done. His stats this season, some of his best games were against St. Louis, New Orleans, St. Louis again, and Miami. None of those teams have a winning record. Furthermore, he only played against against New England and Seattle in the regular season. Those are the only two playoff teams that he played against. Okay? Now, they lose to Seattle at the end of the regular season. They, of course, beat them last week, 2 weeks ago.
Also did beat the Patriots as well.
They beat
at home.
Yeah, they beat the Patriots. It's a good win. I'm not disputing that. But all I've seen is all of the statistical evidence of why this is going to happen. And let's tell the truth about who they've beaten. Green Bay this year was not an elite defense. They weren't an elite defense when they won the Super Bowl. They were a good enough defense with a stellar offense. And this season, Green Bay's defense was not elite. And I think that San Francisco exposed that with the running game. The other reason that I think that none of the pressure is on Joe, but the pressure is not as much on Joe Flacco, is because I think the X factor for the Baltimore Ravens in this game is without a doubt Ray Rice. If you look at that team statistically, when Ray Rice plays well, that team wins. So for me, the pressure in that, if there's any pressure to be had on that side of the ball, it squarely lands with Ray Rice. And I think that if Joe Flacco manages the game well, and if Ray Rice can get his carries, get his touches, and get his yardage, that's the shift for me. Is I look at this and I see San Francisco is out of character. Kaepernick really hasn't been tested. Joe Flacco's played in some really tough games.
Yeah.
And he's gone through some really big growing up periods in his career.
Well, I sort of think that you kind of made my point for me. Let's throw all the statistics from the regular season out, because in the last few weeks, Colin Kaepernick has proven that he has the character and the skill to rise to the occasion. And with the coaching staff around him, they have put him in a perfect position. And I think that mentally, he's just one of those guys that has the it factor where the situation's not going to affect him. And if you hear him, if you've heard him speak since they won the championship game, he's making all the right noises of a guy that's going to be able to rise to the occasion. Now, secondly, as far as your point about Baltimore beating the Patriots and beating Peyton Manning up in Denver, those guys are stand-in-the-pocket old-school quarterbacks. They're not hard to confuse because, I mean, I take that back. They're Pro Bowl, Hall of Fame quarterbacks, MVPs at times, but at the same time, they are pocket passers, and for a proven defense like the Baltimore Ravens, who have a lot of experience dealing with that type of offense, they were able to win those games because they were able to mix up their coverages, disguise their coverages to a point where they did kind of confuse those guys at times, and they were able to beat them. That's not going to happen with Colin Kaepernick. You have no idea what he's going to come at you with. And he's proven that over the last couple of weeks. He has beaten you with his legs. He's beaten you him with the running game. He's beaten you with his decision-making. And then he comes out and manages a game in the championship game, throws pinpoint accurate passes, hands off the ball when he's supposed to. He's just not going to be... He's not going to be confused. And I think that the offensive coordinator and Jim Harbaugh have designed brilliantly this offense this year to complement what Kaepernick can do, and they are going to call the right plays. He's not going to be confused. He's not going to be overwhelmed by the situation, and he is not a stand-in-the-pocket quarterback. So those factors... Colin Kaepernick's not going to have the best game of his life in order to win this Super Bowl. Joe Flacco is. And he's one of those guys that kind of stands around, too. He can run at times, but definitely not to the capacity that Kaepernick can. And the defense of the San Francisco 49ers are going to get to him. They're going to stop the run like they have all year long. And they are going to get to him and eventually win this game because... they're going to be able to confuse Flacco, kind of like Baltimore did to those other quarterbacks.
Yeah, I can't just look at it and say, well, look at what he's done, look at what he's done. I have to, in my mind, and this is kind of the same argument that I would always make with Notre Dame, is it's kind of the same thing. It was like, yes, but look at who it's against. Look, yes, he managed a game and beat Atlanta with pinpoint passes. Guess what? Atlanta is far from an elite defense. Atlanta plays a very vanilla defense. There's not a lot of deception. There's not a lot of movement pre-snap. There's no defensive audibling. They call it. They go out there, and if you can beat them, you can beat them, right? You look at Seattle, it's like, okay, Seattle plays a very tough, hard-nosed, physical defensive football game. But up front, I'm not sure if they're at the same level that Baltimore is. And then, who? You're looking at Green Bay. I think we've already covered that. My point is this, is that if anybody has a strategic advantage, if you will, or if we're going to talk about strengths of football teams, it's going to be the Ravens that have the veteran presence and the ability to confuse their opponent. And I think truly, probably the focus of our conversation is in the wrong place, because I really believe truly that whoever can stop the run is going to win this football game. Because if Frank Gore is getting 4 yards a carry, then forget it. Because then you got to try to stack the box to stop him. And Kaepernick can absolutely beat you. And if you can't play contained defense on the edges because you've got to stop Frank Gore, you've got a problem.
I think both teams have the ability. Yeah, both teams have the ability to stop the run, and I think that point's sort of a wash.
I think it is. But if either one of those teams gets a running back on track, that's clearly an advantage.
No question.
And so likewise with San Francisco. I mean, look, here's the other thing I'm going to point out. Look at the receiving core. Because I think that, you know, I could make the argument that I think Anquan Boldin might be one of the most underrated wide receivers in the last 6 or 7 years. I think when you look at his numbers and his production and what he's done, especially in Baltimore with not as much talent around him, really kind of amazing. Torrey Smith has the ability to stretch the field. It's a very understated group of wide receivers, but they can hurt you, and Joe Flacco can hurt you deep. So if they can get Ray Rice on track and San Francisco has to start crowding closer to the line, that to me is a recipe for disaster. I can imagine multiple ways that Baltimore can beat them. Not that San Francisco can't. I mean, look, if you wanted to, we could trade seats, and I could argue just as vehemently for San Francisco. I really could, and that's why I think this game is going to be absolutely fantastic. I am rooting for Baltimore. I like Ed Reed more than anything. I really want to see Ed Reed get a ring. And on the flip side of that, we know this is a fact. Either Ed Reed or Randy Moss is getting a ring. Talking about Randy Moss and the comments he made, God, I found that so fascinating. I mean, the crazy thing is you're right. It's absolutely disrespectful to say that when you are currently playing for the San Francisco 49ers. Then again, I think I could also say that, you know, hey, you knew it was a snake when you picked it up. I mean, you had to know on some level that Randy Moss has the ability to have an out-of-body experience and say or do something completely ridiculous.
That's why I wasn't for the pick when they acquired him. I didn't like him in my locker room. I actually didn't want him on my team when he came along, and was pleasantly surprised that he was willing to be that veteran leader that I mentioned earlier and accept his role and be a mentor to a lot of these younger players.
Which they have. I mean, in his defense, the Crabtrees and the Vernon Davises and all these guys on this wide receiving core, they have to a man said how much he's helped them out. And unfortunately, I think that the 49ers absolutely have to have Randy Moss, and maybe even going forward, they have to have Randy Moss. Because what he does for them that they didn't have last year is he extends the field. He stretches the field, and it doesn't matter. He can play until he's in his 40s. He's still going to have that second gear speed and that ability to make a defense respect the deep ball. And when you've got guys that are very good, but I wouldn't say any of these guys really have elite speed. I mean, Crabtree's very good.
Well, Vernon Davis
for a tight end has very good speed.
Very good speed.
But not separation speed from a wide receiver.
Anybody that's going to be covering him, he's going to be able to get away from. He's probably one of the fastest players on the Niners roster, second to Randy Moss.
And man, isn't that interesting? I mean, that's a whole other conversation too, is, you know, who's going to cover Vernon Davis?
Nobody.
It's great to look at. I think anything you wanted to focus on in this game, you could have interesting storylines. But to get down to the meat of it, when I heard Randy Moss say that he thought he was the greatest receiver of all time, my initial like visceral reaction was like, you are such a bag of douche. Like, I can't believe you said that. Like,
he's an extra large bag of douche.
I can't believe those words came out of your mouth. And then my second reaction was, I wonder if this is grounded at all in fact. Like, I wonder if there's any shred of possible evidence that could even come close to supporting this. And so I looked it up. I had to look.
I know. Well, the only one you really need to look at is number of rings first.
I don't think that's fair because I don't think...
Sure it is.
Well, here's the problem with that, though. Okay, how many years did Jerry Rice play with Joe Montana? How many of those rings came with 16 playing quarterback?
Yeah.
And name Randy Moss's quarterbacks.
Good question.
Is Dante Culpepper in the Hall of Fame?
No, he's
barely in the Pro Bowl. Several years.
I understand.
Tom Brady is the only.
Jerry
Hall of
Rice
Fame.
Played with two Hall of Famers.
Three, possibly. No, not three. He played with two.
Two Hall of Famers that came right back to back, and a lot of the same key players were around him. The same coaching staff. He had a perfect storm, if you will, of players around him to help him achieve the numbers that he did and the rings that he did. And he did it consistently over a long period of time.
But, I mean, to me, the point is that, look, I think that this is all I've heard from players who have commented on this, ex-players who have commented on this, is that, well, you can dismiss the whole thing just by looking at the number of championships. And I don't think that's – I've never thought that's fair because by that rationale – okay, then, so Ben Roethlisberger is a better quarterback than Dan Marino, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I see
what you're saying.
You can't automatically just say, well, the rings, it's scoreboard and the rings determine it all. And you also can't say, well, look, Jerry Rice is the number one in every statistical category. Yeah, but he's played for more years than Randy Moss, too. So for me, I kind of have to evaluate it in a larger scope.
That's another reason why Randy Moss is a gigantic dump truck full of douche is because if he had waited a few more years and had gotten closer to the total yards and touchdowns and all the other statistical categories that Rice leads in, maybe then we can talk about it just out of respect, especially right before the Super Bowl in a 49er uniform with the man on the property.
Well, there's no question that the timing is horrible. I mean, this is difficult to say something more rudely offensive to 49er fans than to make this claim.
Okay, so what's your statistical argument? Why should Randy Moss even come close to having a case?
Well, my point is this, is not that Randy Moss, you'll never hear me say that Randy Moss is a better wide receiver than Jerry Rice. Let me get that on the table right away. I will say this. I believe that based on what I've seen, that Randy Moss is realistically the only wide receiver that even merits a conversation. And the reason is this, is when you take them and look at them by season, right? Because until Randy Moss completes his career, we don't have any way to base this off of career numbers. So the only way you can do it is by looking at individual seasons and what they did. And what I found, it's kind of intuitive, but it was also kind of surprising to me. So I measured all of any significant kind of statistical category for a wide receiver, like number of receptions, yards per season, touchdowns, yards per catch, all of those types of statistics, right? And there were 10 total statistical categories that I measured. And the remarkable thing is that if you look at overall, Randy Moss in 2003 had the best season that either one of these guys had, because even though he wasn't elite at any level in any one of the statistical categories, he was in the top three in most of them. And so for consistency over one season, 2003, Randy Moss, fantastic season. Shortly followed after that, and I mean it's pretty darn close, is Jerry Rice's 1995 campaign. And what we see with Moss is that he's got a few elite seasons at the top, and then he's got several subpar seasons at the bottom. And sprinkled in between are all the other seasons. Conversely, what you see with Jerry Rice is that he's got a couple of elite seasons. He's got a huge girth of really solid statistical seasons in the middle, and then a couple down at the bottom towards the end of his career. And so, in truth, this is the bottom line. And this, I think everybody kind of knows this. It was interesting for me for it to bear out statistically. Randy Moss has, no longer has, but at one point in time had the ability, the gift, to be the greatest wide receiver that ever played the game, better even than Jerry Rice. However, he never applied himself with the same work ethic and dedication to his craft that Jerry Rice did. Jerry Rice, physically, not as gifted, not as tall, not as fast. I could argue that Randy Moss has displayed that he has better hands than Jerry Rice. But what he doesn't have is the key component that makes the really great ones great, and that is the drive to play for 20 seasons and play every game like it's going to be your last. And Randy Moss has never had that.
And that's why Jerry Rice is still and probably will remain the greatest wide receiver of all time.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens, because now the past...
He might play for a couple more years and might catch up on the statistics, but the point that you just made is exactly why you will not be able to have an argument if you're Randy Moss comparing yourself to Jerry Rice. It's just not even close.
Completely asinine. And the real problem is this, and this is the end. We're coming to the end of the show here, but the real problem is this. If you're Randy Moss, and if, I know you don't like to think about this, but if, by the worst nightmare that Ron Guerin can conjure, if the San Francisco 49ers lose this Super Bowl, this statement becomes the period in the sentence of his career.
I 100% agree.
And how can you not hate the guy if that's what it comes down to?
Well, so, I think it would be quite apropos if that was the case. Heaven forbid.
Okay, so that's it. That's the show. Thanks, you guys, for tuning in. Hopefully, we'll be able to get a couple more of these cranked out. And just for the final record, I'm on the board. I got Baltimore 20, San Francisco 17.
49ers 28, Baltimore 21, Niners win, and San Francisco has championships in baseball and football this season.
God, let's not talk about it. Have a great one, and whatever you guys do, eat some nachos, have a few drinks, and keep writing.
You have been listening to the Sports Underground Podcast, and you know we always welcome your take. You can find the Sports Underground on Facebook, so go ahead and like it. If you want to download, hit us up on iTunes. And remember, come back again next time and get some.